The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO abduction phenomenon.
Hi, my name is Tony Civilelli. I will be your guest host this evening on We Are Not Alone, and today we're going to flip the script, so to speak. And I'm going to interview Mr. David Twitchell, who has done many interviews for this show, We Are Not Alone. I decided maybe it was time David would say a little bit more than he usually does. He has a lot to share, a lot to bring forth. And it's only fair that we get him a good, fair shot this evening to bring some of this information that he has out to the public. Mr. Twitchell was born in Detroit, Michigan, and served in the U.S. Army in Germany from 1969 to 1971. Although he worked as a dye maker for 33 years since the age of 18, he had been an avid student of the Bible, the UFO abduction, and psychic phenomena since his own close encounter since 1962. He was hosted the show on WHFR since 2009 and on a local TV show for 10 years prior to that. He has written two nonfiction books, one fiction book, and co-authored George Filer's book on UFO sightings around the world. He has lectured on the subject and been the guest on many radio shows and documentaries. Let's welcome Mr. David Twitchell. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Tony. This seems very strange.
Well, that's part of the whole paranormal phenomena. So I'm flipping the script this evening, and I actually have some questions for you, and I know I've heard some of them before in listening to your show, but just let me go ahead and let's get these things going.
Very good.
When you last interviewed me, I was your last interview, you talked about your sighting in 1962. Can you tell us a little bit more about that this time?
Yeah, I've mentioned the basics of my story on this show before. And so my loyal listeners will probably say, oh, here he goes again. But I want to explain my sighting more in depth, if I may.
Yes, please.
Yeah, it was on a Saturday night, and I remember that because we were going to church the next day. My family, my sister, my parents, and I were going to church the next day. So it was a Saturday night, and it was about 11 o'clock at night. And I walked into my bedroom. I was like 14 at the time. Walked into my bedroom and I glanced out the window, and I saw the sky was green. It appeared to be a shimmering green. So I went closer to the window and I saw it was first of all, it was a cloudless night. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, but the entire sky was covered with smoke, and it was not clouds, but smoke. And through this smoke, you could see this shimmering green light. And I called to my mother and I said, Mom, the sky is green. And I heard my dad say, go to bed, David. Because they didn't believe me. I said, no, really, the sky is green.
That's funny.
Yeah, the sky is green. And so my mother came into my room and looked out, and she said to my father, "The sky is green." So he got up, and pretty soon the whole family was out on the front lawn. It was the summer, and we were in our pajamas and looking up at the sky and watching as this humongous craft pierced its way through the smoke. Huh. As if the sky, and this was well within our atmosphere. I mean, it wasn't way up in the sky. It was maybe a couple hundred feet up in the sky. And this humongous craft just kind of came through this smoke. And as if the sky were giving birth to this thing, you know?
I remember you had mentioned it was almost like a portal or something that might have opened.
Is yeah.
that particular sighting you were talking about before with me?
Right. Well, of course, at that time, I was 14 years old. I didn't know anything about UFOs and
right.
anything that had to do with flying saucers and alien visitation. Well, that was the subject of a science fiction. So maybe I was into science fiction, but here's science facts there in our whole family right. face. And so this craft comes through, and it was about the size of the a city block. Now, this was in Detroit, Michigan, in a highly populated residential area. Anyone familiar with Detroit? This was near. This was on Brace Street, near Joy Road and Southfield. Are you familiar with that?
Not quite with that area, but I was born in Detroit and spent my first 5 years there as well, though.
Okay. So this was like 5 blocks from Joy Road in Southfield. And so we, you know, it was not out in the sticks or anything, out in the country.
Right.
And so we watched this craft, and my sister was very afraid. She didn't know what it, all of us. Well, me, I was going to play the macho man. I was very apprehensive, but, you know, this was cool. This was something different.
Well, I got to ask, Dave, you know, my curiosity is piqued with this. What, if you can remember, and, I, you know, if you can't, I understand, but what was your gut feeling at that time of what you sensed you were looking at?
The answer to that is not a clue. Not a clue. None of us had. And I asked my dad, "What is that?" He said, "How should I know?"
You remember that?
And my mother said, very religious woman, "It's the second coming."
Ah.
And I said, "Well, if you know, I was only 14, but if this is the second coming, then time's up, you know, let's run to Jesus." She says, "You just stay right here." Okay. I was happy to do so.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think there could have been any type of missing time incident with that, or possible abduction during that period? Did anybody in your family talk about anything like that in terms of time missing?
Well, I'll tell you, don't remember that, but no one who's abducted really does. But they remember the onset and the aftermath. So the onset, I mentioned the onset, but I looked over to my left, and here's this little tornado of smoke coming down from the sky to the ground. And I mentioned that, and we all looked over at that. I didn't believe that's what my mother said. It's the second coming. And I said, let's run to it.
You know what? Does this, well, let me ask you this. Does this have anything, any type of connection or, you know, a fallback to your first book was the UFO Jesus connection? Was there anything that, you know, in that incident that helped propel that book later on in your life?
Oh, the whole incident did. In fact, I was about to say, when I saw that little tornado of smoke coming down, And I said, let's run to him. And my mother told me to stay put. I said, okay. And then it's like we looked up in the sky again. The smoke was still there. Now, that green shimmering light after the craft came through, there was no light behind it. The colors, they were huge, round, stadium-sized floodlights, okay, on this craft of various colors. But no shimmering colors behind it anymore. And probably colors of these lights on the craft on the other side of the clouds gave this impression. And so I see these lights, but those strong lights, only right above treetop level, this craft was. And those lights, the light never reached the ground.
Right.
The ground was not illuminated. Another thing is, and this you'll hear this in many abduction cases, you know, we had a lot of crickets out there. All night long, you hear the crickets chirping, you know?
So it was the latter part of the summer.
Yeah. And they were perfectly still while that craft was in the air.
Hmm.
And then, there
are a lot of things with nature that correspond or don't correspond in terms of when UAPs or UFOs are in the area, from what I understand. Well, you've piqued my curiosity again here. I had two different questions here. One, had anybody else in the neighborhood that you recall seen this or reported it or anything like that? And I want to know more about your book, The UFO and Jesus Connection.
Okay. Well, to finish the story of my sighting, I didn't see anybody. We didn't see anybody else, any of the neighbors out looking at it. But I mean, like I say, Joy Road in Southfield, people are coming and going even at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
I'm sure there are people coming out of a bar looking up saying, I'm never going to drink again.
And so,
the funny part is, and I say funny, it's not really funny because this happens all the time. When that incident was over and that craft was gone, it's like 1 second it's there, next second it's gone. And we just turned around, walked back in the house and went to bed as if nothing had happened. As if we didn't see this smoke and light show, you know?
I've heard that type of thing before with abduction cases, you know, the Allagash abduction contact case, where after they saw, obviously, the craft, there was an abduction that took place. This is just one incident that they didn't want to discuss anything. They didn't want to do anything. They just wanted to go right back to sleep or go to sleep. That's like what they wanted to do. And then the next day, they didn't discuss it either when they went on the lake again and continued with their fishing expedition there. And they just didn't really bring it up until a few years later.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because what happened to you, David, I have heard this myself before as a UFO researcher and more for the past 25 years. So that is not unusual, even though to maybe the average listener, it may seem unusual, but it's not.
No, it happens all the time. And the next morning, of course, we did go to church, but my dad went and bought a newspaper, a Detroit Free Press, I guess. And he said, well, they've explained. Now, he didn't report this. But like I say, other people must have.
Right, okay.
To the point where they had to give an excuse for these.
Of course.
For this incident. So they said what these silly people over there saw was nothing more than the Northern Lights. Now, and I said to my mother, here's a 14-year-old kid, you know, I said, the Northern Lights are like ribbons of light. They weren't like the shimmering lights that we saw.
Let alone a craft.
Yeah, we saw these lights, round lights on the craft. And my mother, just to placate the kid, said, you know, if the government says that that's what they saw, then that must have been what they saw. So... I let it go at that time, but I never really let it go. like I say, it's what spawned the whole thing with me. In fact, I started investigating paranormal ghost type things and life after death and that type right. of thing. But then I got back into the UFO business, you know, because that's what really started the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, how did that correspond with you putting together, you know, the UFO Jesus connection? And what year again did that come out, David? That your first book?
My first book came out in 2001.
Okay. Because, you know, that's pretty fascinating because we've had ancient aliens on for quite a while as well, many years. But, you know, you brought that to light, you know, right before or the beginning process of when that was coming out as well mm-hmm. in terms of their show. Obviously, Eric Von Däniken had a lot more to do with these types of things back in the mid-60s, late-60s, early-70s. But for you to put together a book like that and then put it out, you know, you're kind of ahead of the time there. And I always felt there were connections in my humble opinion, just with research and hearing things and studying things, you know, the old let out of the desert, you know, a cloud by day, a pillar of fire by night. And there's many things, Ezekiel sighting. Yeah. Tell me more about, you know, the connection you put together.
Well, there's so many things. My book, The UFO Jesus Connection, is in three parts. You know, if you're going to compare two things and make a connection between two things, you got to talk about one thing and then talk about the other thing and then make the connection. So my book is in three parts. One is biblical UFOs like Ezekiel's wheel within a wheel and Moses' pillar of cloud and fire and all these flying discs that they saw, you know, the
Romans, also nuts and bolts, you know, part of that
right
verbiage
right,
type right. of time for that time.
And then the second part is all the things that personally happened to me as far as ghostly adventures, experiences with the paranormal and ghosts. Okay, just to prove that I do believe that there's life after death. I do believe in a creator. I do believe in a spirit. So I'm not just saying that God and Jesus were nothing more than aliens and flying saucers.
Right, right, okay. Of course. So when did you first get acclimated to the idea of spirit or, you know, the interest in ghosts type of idea? Was that before the sighting or after the sighting? Because I'm curious, because a lot of times after sightings, people have a more, how should we say, open up aspect of their being themselves to notice these things, if you will.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, a lot of things happened when I was a kid, even before this sighting, okay, that convinced me that there were spirits. My Uncle Harry, okay, old guy, he served in fact, the First World War, okay? And so when I was a kid, he was an elderly man, and his wife passed away. And he, of course, was broken up about it, and he claimed that the day of her passing, she joined him at night and slept with him that night. And my mother said, well, he's old, he's just lost his wife, he's all torn up, and this excuse and that excuse. And well, I didn't know so much, you know.
How old were you again, David, at that time?
Oh, I can only guess. I may have been 12, 13, okay. But not old enough to do an experiment that I should have done. Let me tell the story. Uncle Harry and his son, Bud, came over to our house. They lived in Mount Morris, Michigan. And, of course, we lived in Detroit. And they came to visit after Aunt Gusty, we called her. Aunt Gusty passed away. And this was quite a little time after her passing. And they came in the house. Now, you have a dog, and you know how that dog reacts, right? When a stranger comes to the door, well, first she's got to bark, and, you know, who's this person? But once you let them in, well, they must be all right. So let them in. She goes over, and she sniffs Bud, and Bud pats her, and she's good with him, and she goes over to Uncle Harry. She looks up and was not looking at Uncle Harry's face, but above his head. Hair on her back of her neck stood right up, and she barked a deep bark that you never heard out of this dog before.
Right.
Cannot understand if she didn't ever before or after react that way to any new person that came into that house. Hmm. We couldn't quiet her. We had to put her outside. And when she did that, Harry looked over to Bud with that knowing look, and they both gave each other a knowing look.
Right.
And we brought her back in the house a little later. She went right back over to Uncle Harry, looked right up above his head, and started barking again. We had to put her out and wouldn't bring her back in until our guests left.
Right. That's peculiar because, as I mentioned earlier, nature, animals, insects, you mentioned the crickets earlier, you didn't hear a peep out of. When things paranormal, from maybe another dimension of existence, leak or seep into ours, it happens.
Right. So, Tony, I wonder if I can interject right here to let our listeners know that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. We have our guest host, Tony Civilelli, and I am the guest for a change, David Twitchell. So this is We Are Not Alone. So Tony, right. Take her back over.
All right, David, if I may continue, you had mentioned, your father was with you with the sighting, your mother, you mentioned your sister. I had the privilege, a few years back at one of our Michigan MUFON meetings, and you were a guest speaker and your sister was there as well. So you also mentioned that, she may have been subject to visitations, abductions, possibly herself. Is this true?
Oh, yes. And in fact, back when we were kids, I used to get bounced. But we had a 3-bedroom home. And of course, my parents had the master bedroom. And my sister and I had the other 2 bedrooms. And I used to get bounced back and forth from one room to the other. And I didn't care much, That didn't bother me. But I didn't know why, okay? I didn't know why I was getting bounced back and forth. Well, it turns out in later years, I found out that my sister was having these visitations. These little guys would come into her room and take her out of that room and take her to a craft. Now, I plan on having my sister on this show, possibly, hopefully next month, so she can tell the story. But briefly, she thought, well, if I'm not in this room, they won't be able to find me. So, David, can I have your room? I don't care. So we switched rooms. But we kept switching back and forth. Because when she found out that when she was in a different room, they'd still find her. Surprise, surprise. I even made my room in the basement one time when I got older. And she'd have any room she wanted. They'd still find her. That reminds me of people that say, I'm going to move. I'm going to move 100 miles from here so they can't find me.
And I've heard this before. It doesn't really matter. I think it's all, everybody has some type of a honing. I don't want to say, maybe it's a an implant or just a vibratory frequency. I think our visitors, whichever group that is doing most of the alleged abductions, have a way of finding just about anyone, anywhere.
Yeah. My sister is convinced she has an implant in her arm.
Right. Okay.
She could feel it. And there was a red spot in her arm, and she had a doctor look at it. And it's a foreign object in there. Well, I said to her, why don't you have it removed? No. She was very adamant. She didn't want it removed. For some reason, people are like that. These are like that.
I've heard that before. With Whitley Strieber. I've met Whitley before, but also hearing him on his show, at Dreamland. He's obviously a famous, quote unquote, alleged abductee, contactee, and he had talked about that in his ear area. But I've heard this from others as well. And sometimes when they're going to be removed, they burrow themselves in deeper, these little implants. And other people have had different cases where they've had them removed. But often it's what you said with your sister, and she's going to be on. So have her show next month. I'm sure this is going to be very interesting. But speaking of guests, upcoming guests, you've had literally, David, over 200 people as guests on your show throughout the period that you've been doing We Are Not Alone. Who in your mind stands out who's made an imprint on you, if you don't mind sharing?
Oh, well, I would say that the feather in my cap, shall I say, would be Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
Yes.
And I've had Stanton Friedman on. I hate to be a name dropper.
Right, right. Well, you've had many, many very interesting, guests, and a lot of them are big time with UFO. Yeah. And not that any one is more important than any other, more famous than others. But, who has made the most impression upon yourself? And you said Dr. Edgar Mitchell, of course, of Apollo 14, astronaut walking on the moon. I have conversed with Dr. Mitchell, rest his soul, in the past as well. Very intriguing. Who else comes to mind, David?
Well, of course, Stanton Friedman. And I've had Cheryl Lynn Carter. I've had Stephen Bassett. Now he's deep into the UFO topic. Kathleen Martin.
Right. And she's the niece of Betty and Barney Hill.
Right. That's right. And, let's see. Paul Hellyer, the late Paul Hellyer.
Right? Yeah, Canada. Yep, the minister.
Yeah. Jaime Musan was on back in 2019.
Mexican journalist, yep.
Yeah.
60 Minutes of Mexico.
Yeah. And Peter Robbins.
Right, of course.
And so anybody can look that up, if I may mention my website.
Yes, please do. There's a lot of great information with those guests on those particular shows, and many more guests I have to let you know.
Well, all the archive shows are at my website, which is UFOimplications.com, and click on We Are Not Alone, and take you to all of the archive shows. And I can't mention that as the host, but I can mention it as a guest.
There you go. So I'll mention it as a host. Check it out. You also have done a full-length documentary with Michigan MUFON State Director and my friend Bill Konkoleski, Abducted by Aliens, UFO Encounters of the Fourth Kind. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Bill and I had been graciously asked to speak in Pennsylvania, and I forget the year, but it was a little while ago. And so he and I were both there, and some guy came up to us and asked if he could interview us about our abduction experiences. And well, my sister found out about the fact that she was an abductee. She always said, you know, this is UFOs, that's crazy talk, and nobody could be abducted by aliens, you know. Once again, very religious person, you know. But, and when she read my book, The UFO Jesus Connection, she just read it because her brother had written it, okay? And when she was done, she read about all of these people who had been abducted and the things that that she could identify with. And she started thinking, well, what's going on here? So she gives me a call. Funny thing, she gives me a call and she says, when she was done reading it, she says, has anybody else written a book about this? Are there any other books out there about this? I chuckled. I said, yeah, there's a couple.
Right. So you're saying your sister was not really, and this is the same sister you talked about earlier that was with you in the 62 sighting out in the Detroit area, that later on came forward and was presenting with you at one of the MUFON presentations that I had gone to about alleged abductions, etc. So she at first was basically in denial of this until she started familiarizing the routine, so to speak, with many other people that had gone on. And then she asked you if there were more books about this. That's interesting.
So I said, yeah, I'll get you some. So I got Bud Hopkins Witnessed and gave her a copy of Witnessed. And she read the book and she calls me up and she says, I've got to talk to you. I got to talk to you in person. Come on over. She comes over and my wife and I sit down with her and she says, why am I having the same experiences that this woman in this book is having? I said, uh-oh.
Right.
It's the first time I had realized that she was an abductee. And, you know, the fact that she was switching rooms back and forth with me and all, everything started coming out at that point. And so there was a psychologist in MUFON that spoke with abductees, with experiences, I should say. Well, some call themselves experiencers. Some call themselves abductees.
Contactees, etc.
Contactees, yeah. But he would hypnotize them and get some of this information out. So I took her to see this guy. And under hypnosis, she recalled on that night where we saw had our sighting, she recalled these small grays coming out. There was a ladder. A smaller craft had come out of that larger craft. And then there was a ladder that came out of that smaller craft. And these little beings came down that ladder, came over to us, and took me by the hand and led me off and up the ladder. And then they came back and led her off. She doesn't know. Of course, I don't remember any of that. And under hypnosis.
Excuse me, Dave. She remembered this after some hypnosis, is what you're saying?
Under hypnosis.
Okay.
This came out. And so when we, they brought her back down, my parents and I were standing on the front lawn of our home, still looking up as if there was something to see. Maybe there was still a craft there. I don't know. But they led her over to us, and then we were switched back on, obviously. And that's when we discovered the craft was gone. We walked into the house.
And this goes back to the 62 sighting.
That's right.
Very interesting. Yep. So it took that prodding and relaxation method of hypnosis, and then this information came forward. You know, it's obviously it's similar to some of the different things with Bud Hopkins and the pseudonym of Kathy Davis and her sister and many others after that. But you're right, this is nothing that's that unusual with this phenomenon, but it takes some type of, courage to dip into it and do a regressive hypnosis and see, and it doesn't happen every time. Sometimes it's not related to this phenomenon, but to bring out the memories that have been, you know, buried for whatever reason.
That's right. That's right. And that's what it took for her. And then she finally realized not only is this a real phenomenon, but she is part of it.
Right.
So, and then the things that had happened to her before, we'll let her tell that story.
Right.
But other things that she had just sloughed off as one of those things, even though she didn't know what one of those things were.
Right. hey, that's Terry Garr in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Yeah. Just one of those things. Move past the subject.
One of what things, he says, you know?
Right.
I don't know. But at any rate, she started to realize these things that happened were abductions.
Right.
And these weren't dreams at all. She wasn't dreaming that she was passing through solid walls and windows up to a waiting craft. It really happened. In fact, when she was a kid, she thought this happened to everybody.
Right. It's an interesting phenomenon. Obviously, it's going to be an interesting show. And I've often wondered sometimes, because I've had, you know, my studies with the Monroe Institute and practicing out-of-body experiences, et cetera, where in the initial part of an out-of-body experience, it seems like I do have a recognition of an ethereal body of the exact me. But as I start going into a higher frequency, there is no more me anymore. It's like a shared consciousness. And then I just black out. And I explained that in my show with you, where it's kind of like a safety mechanism. I almost wonder at times when they abduct, it's part of an ethereal aspect of yourself that goes onto the craft and through the walls and onto the craft. And yet the thought and everything that goes along with it is so strong that it can make an impression on the physical body, including implants. Mm-hmm. And then I would think some of them are actual physical implants and the physical body goes as well. But I do think in times, David, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, that at times it is more of an ethereal astral aspect of your existence that is brought onto a craft or onto a contact association, if you would like, for information purposes. And then that aspect is led back to its physical self, you know, if it's not a physical abduction at that particular time.
Yeah, I think it's 50-50. I think some of the times it's actually physical, and some of the times it's ethereal.
Yes.
And it depends on what the situation is. But I think, you know, if they're going to take you aboard and put an implant in your person, then that's a physical abduction. Otherwise, you know, maybe a lot of these abductions where you float through walls and windows, maybe that is ethereal, maybe that is in spirit.
Yeah, and that, you know, that reminds me of Raymond Fowler. You're of course familiar with him. One of the first MUFON associates in the late 60s. And obviously he did a lot of regressive hypnosis, and he did work with Betty Andreasen and also the Allagash abductees, Jim and Jack Weiner and Charlie Fultz and Chuck Rack. But he came to a conclusion in his book, The Watchers 2, that he felt that who's ever in charge of the UFO phenomena, at least many times, that the near-death or the death experience itself is all part of that. And that aspect of it might be related to some of the UFO phenomena, in that the energies can go back and forth into different physical bodies or are impregnated into the physical bodies as well, because we know there's a hybridization program probably going on. But
yeah.
I felt it was very curious that Mr. Fowler, after many years of deep research, you know, and he felt that conclusion was very merit.
Yeah. And that, so now we're possibly talking about shades of reincarnation. Am I right?
And that's your connection with the spirit, the ghost, all those things, paranormal, and people who have abductions and vice versa that have paranormal experiences are more open to remembering abductions, or people that have sightings are more open to the spirit, quote unquote, ghostly aspect of existence. I think as you go into these realms of existence, astral, ethereal, higher realms of existence, I think they kind of open up an aspect of our being, if you would, that allows more association and awareness of these things that go on. And as a remote viewing instructor myself, I also feel that that is another tool to use that may allow something like that to happen. But what do you think on that?
Well, I always say that if a spirit can enter into a physical shell one time, why can't it do so two times, three times,
exactly,
1,000 times, indefinitely, you know? So, I mean, what is so much more fantastic about reincarnation than being born into a physical body,
right,
the first time?
That's why some call it re-embodiment, for lack of better.
Right.
Yeah, reincarnation, in my opinion, some of it is going on simultaneously and just shifting consciousness. I mean, Jacques Vallée, you know, he had one of those quotes that I thought, and he always says, I propose to describe consciousness as the ability to associate time, you know, differences between time and space, and they're only, you know, the byproducts as consciousness goes in and out of different aspects of your actual being.
Mm-hmm. So once again, I have to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Our guest host today is Tony Civilelli, and he is interviewing the usual host, me, David Twitchell, here on We Are Not Alone. So please continue.
Yeah, David, I wanted to ask you also, now that you have even more data and information behind you, your latest book, A New Heaven, A New Earth. Tell us a little bit about that. What's going on with it?
Well, that's a science fiction book.
Okay.
And I'm kind of proud of it because it's kind of like the UFO phenomenon from the aliens' point of view. And I won't spoil the story for you. You've read it, right? Well, I won't spoil the story for the listener.
Right.
But basically, it is the Earth has, this is in the future, where we have, where humans have joined with otherworldly beings, otherworlders, and they started a new Earth where they inseminated simian beings indigenous to that planet with their own seed. And it, over time, had matured to a human race like them. But now an asteroid is headed toward New Earth, and it will destroy the planet. So to save their experiment, so to speak, they have to get as many samples as possible of different plants, different species, different animals, and humans off of the planet, and take them to a different planet so that they can breed and survive.
Right.
So all the time there is this reptilian being, very mean, that is after our heroes. And it's going to destroy them. So
all right. Well, don't give too much away. We don't want to definitely give away the real gist and the meaning of what you're getting at there.
Right.
And obviously people get what you're thinking. It's almost like a Noah's Ark type of thing, but it's actually, you know, in my opinion, I can't say, yes, it's science fiction, but hey, I'm with Arthur C. Clarke, you know, today's science fiction is tomorrow's science. So
right.
We're doing a lot of different things in terms of hybridization with plants, different animals, who knows what, with other experiments, with different corporations, black projects, etc. Something tells me with my years, and no doubt with yours as well, as looking into this topic, that there may be a whole hybridization genetics type of program that has been going on and perhaps going on for a long time. And then it has been back and forth in different cycles of perhaps humans or humanoids here on this planet itself, let alone other planets as well. So,
right. Well, I did a lot of research in, I did just as much research, if not more, in the sci-fi book as I did with the nonfiction.
That's interesting.
And, I've taken the things that people have seen, witnesses have seen with UFOs, and abductees have witnessed with otherworlders, and some of the technologies that they have displayed, you know, this just couldn't be, you know. For example, the lighting in the craft, people have stated that when they were abducted, it was very brightly lit in this inside the craft, but when you looked around, you didn't see any shadows. How is that possible? Well, people say, well, that's not possible. The light's got to be cut. They can't decide where the light's coming from.
Right.
But we have the same technology right now.
Sure.
When you look at a television screen, a flat screen, what you're seeing is this energy is projecting off of these, I'm not going to say it right now.
Wavelengths?
Well, no. So
it's like a 2D image. I mean, the only thing you'll see is a flat screen, but you won't see the images on the screen reflecting any type of shadow. So it's more like, in my opinion, a two-dimensional type of presentation.
Right. But if you have that kind of lighting behind the walls, the ceiling, the floor, and you turn up the energy, it's like that flat screen TV. And you're not going to see any shadows because you're going to have backlighting, you're going to have side lighting, you're going to have the illumination doesn't allow for shadows. So that type of thing, it explains it better in the book. But invisibility technologies. We have invisibility technologies, cloaking technologies. We have that. It might be on the stage of infancy stage, but we have it.
Right. I would say it's beyond that in the black budget world, so to speak.
Oh yeah, probably.
You know, here in public, it may be just starting to come out here and there, but in time, these things will be out as well. I mean, it's not always, we're not going to be privy to the exact information that our military representatives and corporations have. And I have to be objective about it. And I don't think we should be in initial stages of it as well. I think that should be all looked at, experimented with, finding out different safety measures, example, things like that. And then some of the things that can be let out, you know, could be let out.
Yeah. Yeah, some of these technologies have to be, they have to know what they're talking about before.
And there's the safety aspect to it all as well.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about extreme energies. And in my humble opinion, Dave, I mean, we've talked about this before. I think one of the big reasons why things cannot just come out is that, you know, it's not a question if they're coming from point A to point B. We understand that. I think people can understand that to a point. But how are they getting here? You know, what is the energy that's being used? Are they opening up, you know, wormholes, black holes? Are there?
Well, I'm convinced that that's what it is.
Yeah, and quantum physics is involved. And as we learn more about that, obviously more will be coming out. But in the process of gathering these energies and understanding them, the potential for disaster is incredible. You know, if we thought back to the H-bomb and the atom bomb and things like that, Well, this, you know, harnessing these type of energies may be even greater. And I do agree with, you know, that aspect of keeping things under wraps for a while without question, because, you know, let's face it, we have problems just with gun laws and violence and things like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're ready as a group. I would say a lot of people are, more so now than before, as we're evolving consciousness. But I don't know as a world if we're just ready yet. But I think in time, we will be. But right now, maybe not. But we're getting ready. We're getting there. And that's why I think there's been a slow indoctrination for many years about this type of information, not just the energies, but the beings themselves, the travel, the quantum world being opened up, the idea of the spirit, the physical, the non-physical, the astral planes, the etheric planes. All these things are much more out in the open now than they were 25, let alone 50 years ago. So we are progressing, in my humble opinion.
Well, I'm convinced that they are coming to our world through a wormhole, because, you know, it's so far distance for them as well as us.
Right.
How are they getting here? Well, right. The wormhole that I saw when I was a kid explains it.
Right, the portal, exactly.
The portal.
I asked you that first question. That's always intrigued me, no question about it.
They leave their point in the universe and fold space and time to where they just appear in our space in time.
You kind of just dial in or tune in. I understand that. I've often, you know, pondered that type of thing. And also I believe, David, that there's also bases here throughout this planet in different areas that are close to Earth as well.
Oh, yeah.
Underground, under ocean. There's so much to this. But, you know, sometimes it takes, like, what happened to you, or if you know somebody, if the audience knows somebody that, you know, something similar has happened to them in the past or recently, there's some type of nudge that often needs to take place before that person takes that leap of faith and that this may be actually going on. And as you and I know, and many of your listeners, and it has been going on perhaps since the beginning.
Oh, yeah. And that's what it took for my sister to be nudged into believing, and then she had to acclimate her religious beliefs,
right,
with the fact that she is being abducted, and it's like I've said before: the greater the universe, the greater the God.
Exactly.
So she
can't put God in a box.
No.
Can't put the source in a box.
That's right. That's right. So. Yeah, I'm convinced that they're getting here from there, where we can't get there from here. But I just wonder, we've got a guest coming to MUFON, and hopefully I can have him on the show later, that claims to be, or has had been, part of that off-world military. And McKinnon, Gary McKinnon.
Oh, okay.
Reported that he
was the one overseas in England that got that information.
Yeah, he hacked into NASA's computers and got the name of off-world
officers, right,
and names of craft that he tried to find that kind of craft in the army, in the Navy or the Air Force, did not exist. So where is he getting this from? And America wanted to bring him over. What's the word? Bring him over to have him stand trial. And I said at the time, they're never going to have him over. They're never going to get him over. And the reason is, if they got him over and had him stand trial, all of this is going to come out. Hmm. All of this truths are going to come out.
Yeah, they have to be explaining why it's going on.
And well, they can't. So it's not going to happen. And sure enough, now we've got extradition. Is the word I was groping for. Extradition. We have extradition agreement with England. If we want somebody extradited, they'll extradite them. What's the deal? And this is a serious offense, hacking into NASA's computers. We should have been able to get them over. We didn't want them over here. And sure enough, England said, no, we're not going to send them. Aw, shucks.
Right.
We didn't fight it because, like I say, that truth would have come out. Well, maybe this other guest can shed some light on the subject. It seems a bit far out, but think back to Roswell, before Roswell, the fact that the idea that they were flying saucers and alien visitation was pretty far out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To some people,
back to Arthur C. Clarke's statement, you know, today's science fiction is tomorrow's science.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to find that out, aren't we?
And they also said today's magic is tomorrow's science as well.
Yeah, I said that any new technology would appear as magic to us.
Correct.
And, yeah, indeed, when that craft came through that porthole, my mother said, it's the second coming. That's the only thing. And that's why I wrote this book, The UFO Jesus Connection. There's so many incidences where people witnessed, and I believe that they did witness, Ezekiel witnessed, a wheel within a wheel, some kind of craft that didn't realize it was a craft. Whose technology was that back then?
Right.
Wasn't ours, wasn't Russia's, wasn't China's.
Right. And as we've talked about, as they said, you know, in different programs, different people have come forward. They can only describe things with the terminology, with the verbiage they had that they could relate to at that time.
That's right. That's right. And so they did. But the Romans used to call those flying
shields.
Flying shields.
Right.
Because it looked like the shields they went into battle with, you know?
Right, right. Yep, I've heard about that too as well.
So what else you got for me, host?
Well, I mean, I think we covered a genre of subjects. I mean, you perked my interest. I don't know if this is stepping a little out of bounds, but who is the person, can we say now who the person is that maybe MUFON will have as a guest, or is that not been solidified yet?
It hasn't been solidified.
Okay, so we won't go there. Okay.
Right, but it'll be interesting if nothing else. Okay, so.
All right, well, David, it's been great. This is Tony Civilelli, your guest host this evening on We Are Not Alone, and we flipped the switch that David Twitchell was the guest of his show, only I hosted it, and I want to say thank you to David for allowing me this opportunity to interview you. I felt all along you've had some good information and stories that you could share with your listeners that are not always in too much detail because you hint at them and give a little bit of them at times. But tonight we got to actually get into a little bit of this. And I think your listeners are more aware of where you're coming from yourself in terms of all your data and your background with the whole subject of ufology.
Well, Tony, I thank you for hosting the show and giving me an opportunity to do just that. Okay?
My pleasure, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And maybe we'll do it again.
That might be an idea, sir.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR.FM's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you'll find my website with all the archived shows. Please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.